just for the day, I got on eyelashes, and I swear I don't want to mess them up. And that's a good topic. I want to identify myself. I am an addict, and on June the 20th, I acknowledged 8 years. But before I... do I got a hold of mic? Today is a great day. You know, it's amazing that how we come out of town. Because, see, my radius is like where I use that any, you know, strips, any alleys, any parkways, any drive-bys, any crack house. And my house was a crack house, so I don't go out of town. And I remember, like, going out of town to Atlanta, Georgia, years ago, and I said, if I go out of town, I'm going to get myself together, and I'm going to stop smoking crack. But it took me to go thousands of, you know, miles away from D.C., that's where I'm from, to go to Atlanta, Georgia. And I said I was going to stop smoking crack. But when I got off the plane, I seen somebody look like they was geeking. Yeah. You know? And I just asked them where the house was, you know. And I stay high. So how's important that now I'm out of town, it ain't far from D.C., that I can go somewhere with other recovery addicts, right? We can share our experience, strength, and hope, and stay clean. Even if you're using, you could come to a meeting. You got a desire, you could come to the meeting. If you just smoke, you could come to the meeting. And I'm glad that this program was designed for people like me, right? And when I came in here, I got 4 children. I don't even know how to be a mother. I don't know how to be a parent. All I do is trick, use, manipulate, use again, trick again, use again, trick again, use again, and boost. That's my story. But when I got in here and I got in treatment, a young lady sitting in this room, it took me to my first NA meeting in 2001. I remember in treatment, and they tell us to take a physical, and they tell me you positive, and that's a part of my story. I'm sorry. But I'm not mad about it today. We're talking about just for today. That's right. They told me to take a physical, and they told me I was diagnosed with HIV. I think I got a reason to use now. That was a big reason for me. And they guided me. They helped me in the treatment setting. I cussed everybody out. I cussed the director of the program out. They put me in circles. You know how they indict you and put the sign on you. You know, I had to sign a contract. I'm like, my behavior is off the hook. You just told me I'm positive. Now you want me to start smoking crack and snorting dope. You told me I can't trick. Then you tell me don't get in a relationship with nobody in a treatment. I'm like, that was too much for me. I'm just coming off the street. I want to know why, like, if I can't get one of the dudes that's in a treatment, just give me the bus driver then. That's what I did. I got the driver. He worked for the treatment, and they put me in a circle again. My word was against theirs. I don't know what you're talking about. It wasn't me. But I remember one day, this young lady is sitting in this meeting. She took me to my first meeting. I heard something. They told me get a sponsor, and I got a sponsor. They told me do step work. No, I'm not perfect. Yes, I have some shortcomings. Do I act out? Have I act out? A lot of days, yes, I have. Was my behavior off the hook? Yes, it was. Did I judge people? Yes, I did. Do I talk about people? Yes, I did. Did I harm people? Yes, I did. When I came here, was you boosted? Yes, I did. I'm talking about everything they say don't do, I did in recovery. I'm like, okay, but y'all told me y'all can help me with drugs and alcohol, but after doing some step work, how the disease will manifest itself in the other areas of my life, so I need to fill that void. My thing, the void, was sex, shopping, and boosting clean. And I remember my sponsor say, you know you can get locked up clean. I'm like, look, the guard at the door, he was real old. He cannot catch me. I'm not using. I got a little cute one more time because in the inside, it talks about, I always share about this. The inside be real shaky, but the outside appear to be attractive. It says it in the fifth step. Some things I can identify in when me doing step work or when I'm like reading for me. I'm talking about put some reassurance on my recovery. Now I'm going to go back and forth just for the day. I haven't tricked. Just for the day. I haven't harmed nobody. Just for the day. I ain't gossip, just for the day. I ain't talked about nobody, just for the day. I ain't used. Now, just for the day, I'm being responsible for them 4 children I talk about. One of my sons got full-blown AIDS. And I want to know, like, how is I'm going to raise this baby? I was in treatment. My baby was 3 months old, and a doctor said he's not going to live till he gets 6 months. He a lie. My baby, 8 years old in the first grade. They said you got to go to pharmaceutical class, nursing class, CPR, first aid, parenthood. I'm like, all these classes? And then you want me to get a meet and she sign? Then you want me not trick? I was like, how is I going to do all this stuff? You know, you was giving me too much. But God was preparing me. He was preparing me for the day. And I'm coming up on 8 years. I still have my son. My son is in the first grade and he's doing well.
That's right.
I'm responsible for 4 children. And like I remember calling my sponsor and telling her, I don't know how to cook a roast. Can you teach me? Can you teach me how to be a young lady? Because my mind say he look good, he smelt good, and he might got more than $20. You think I can, you know, do him? I'm talking about with my mindset. My mind say I might can trick one more time with the dope man. My trick status changed. My trick status was crack and heroin. I get in recovery. My trick status changed. That mean I want a big screen TV. I might want to get my hair done. And I remember he count all these ones, and my stomach starting to flip, and I wanted to use, so I had to make a decision. I'm talking about when I made a decision, was in treatment, and coming out of treatment, I had to say the third step prayer, God, take my will and my life, guide me in my recovery, and show me how to live. I didn't know that was the third step prayer. But I'm talking about being prepared just for the day. My uncle was in recovery. He told me that prayer. I was cracked out my mind when he told me that prayer. I was like, what? What are you talking about? Do you got $20? But that prayer instilled in my life. So when I get in treatment, I said that prayer and I didn't use. I'm talking about going through all them classes, being responsible for my children. I'm the one that, like, had a case with the Child Protective Service. Like, the days they my case closed. But I had to be, like, you talking about the days they had to call my sponsor, like, sponsor, can you help me? I'm in a position to get my daughter back, my daughter 11. I got my boys. And my mind tell me, look, it's going to be a problem. And I get down to court building about a month ago, and they tell me, it's not a problem. You still got rights over your daughter. You can get her back, but we're going to have to open your case up for you to go to court so the judge can say, yes, Angel, you can have your daughter. But remind you, they asked for some requirements. One of the requirements for me to go to meetings, stay clean. Take care of your HIV status. Take care of your son with full-blown AIDS. So I did that. Then when they look at the letter they just wrote up for me about a month in the court, my letter is different now. It talk about, look, she responsible. She work. I'm a case manager. How you get there? How you get from the crack house on your knees? To like you work in a government building with your own office. How you get there? Something happened. How you get to the point that you can share openly that you got HIV? Something happened. I went to school and I got educated. That's what happened. I started accepting me. But any given day, just for the day, it'll show through my behavior if I really accepted it. How do you share that you've been here going on 8, but you got 3 years clean without sleeping around? How you share that? Because one day I went to my sponsor. She said, I need to do another 6-step. And I did. I need to do an 11-step. And I did. She said, I need you to pray. And I did. I don't know when it happened, but all I know, I ain't been doing nothing. But just for the day, my mind would tell me, since ain't nothing going on, you might need to rig some stuff up. Yeah. know, it got to be some drama. You got to do something. And what I remember is my story in recovery that I had accumulated in here. I got a story in here. And I remember the pain. I ain't talking about the end of using. I'm talking about the end of me not want to harm myself and harm another human being no more. I'm talking about I looked in the mirror and I was like, this got to stop. You can look real cute, but your inside is real shaky. You need to stop. So now I can share that. But at first, while I was feeling good, I wasn't sharing nothing. I was like, hey, what's up? You know, because I'd done a 7-step. And it talks about how our jaws be real tight. And we on a defense mode. And we not approachable. And we grit on people. How did you notice that about you? I kept reading. I kept writing it. And I had to be honest. Just for the day. It talks about going to a meeting 90 and 90. Calling your sponsor, sharing with others, they sharing with you, and you practice the principles of the program. That's what it talks about today. But the good thing is that I'm willing to do whatever I need to do to get better. Now, when I look at the word recovery, I can't just recover off of crack and heroin. I need to recover off of everything. Because if I don't, I'm a use. Because it's going to take me back down. If I don't practice the principles of the program to the best of my ability, what's going to happen is, Angel, you're going to use. You're going to use. I'm clear on that. So a lot of times, I got to, like, stay humble. Some days, I have a mark on my lip, and my friend was like, what happened to your lip? I bit my lip because I shut up. They were saying something that was right. Instead of me being defensive and trying to, you know, my head and bob and weave and go all in, I was like, all right, okay, all righty now. Wow. Because they was right. I'm talking about people in my network. How about you ain't even got it? I don't have, look, everybody in here is in my network. Because when I'm going through and I ain't feeling good, I know how to pull somebody up and like, look, this is up with me. Can you help me? Can you help me, please? I don't want to smoke no crack. I don't want to boost no more. I don't want to trick no more. I want to be responsible for my children when they call me and say, well, Miss Angel, can you come up to the school? Everybody, most people in this room, they heard my story over and over, but some pieces I haven't shared. Excuse me. How... it's important that it says it in the literature. We have to listen. How did you get there? Hey, I heard somebody share their experience. They gave me some hope. And I like, listen. What is your relationship with your higher power, Angel? Look, it's better than it was yesterday. That's all I know. All I know is that I'm in a prayer mood more than I ever in my life been. My prayers is like this. God, I hope the dude got some money. I hope the trick is going, you know, come around the corner. Or I hope it's some butters. My prayer changed. So just for the day, God, please help me. In the literature, it's talking about my mind and my soul and inside. Help me. Help me. Sometimes I don't know what to say because my mind will tell me if I tell God he helped me, then when he do, I back up. I'm like, hold up. Wait a minute, God. You helped me too fast. Wait a minute. So I just like, help me right now. Help me what you know what my heart desires. Come into my heart and save my soul, man. And I ain't remember this prayer till I got clean, but my great-grandmother told me in the 6th grade that same prayer. How that I need this program because now I can be responsible and hang out with my blood family members. Look, I'm going to share this. Last month, my grandmother turned 75. We had a surprise birthday party. My mom always wanted to drive my car and ride my grandmother around. Because at the end, My grandmother was the one took me to detox. I don't know if y'all hear me or not. And I was able to go pick her up one day and put her in my car and take her to the store. And me and my grandmother is so tight, it's scary. And they be like, you know, certain members of my family be like, why you and grandma so tight, but you ain't tight with your mother? It's something going on with me and my mother. How about you mad because your mother's still smoking crack and you can't smoke? They go on the eyelashes. How about when I need something, my mother be there for me every time, smoked out and all. And I hold resentments with her because I want her to get this program. But it was told to me, you keep doing what you got to do, you will be her hope. And the result for the day, me and my mother talk, she called me like, I love you. And she at my house, looking over my house with my 15-year-old son. And she at my house, take care of my house. But I'm here. But my mother is being supportive in all areas of my life. Yes, but I still have resentments with her. Because I want her to get it. It ain't her time yet. Right. Mind your business. And what happened is, I could be open with my mother, but I still got something going on with me, how I really feel. So what happened, me and my grandmother, tight, my grandmother, one of them old praying grandmas. She always take me to what palm to read, what psalm to read. She always come get my children, take them to church even when I don't go. And we got so tight that it's scary. And my grandmother just been there, my mother been there, but I still got some abandonment issues with my mom. Then I shared it with my sponsor. I shared it with people in my network, but some days it would creep up through other relationships and show me how bad I worked on it or have it. That means when you come in my life, you won't have to stay. That means I'ma hold on to dear life in relationships, intimate ones, friendships, and all. We rolling together. It don't matter. It shows from my relationships with other people. And I'm not talking about just the intimate one. I'm talking about anybody across me. When you there, we roll together. Good, bad, and difference, man. Because I got some abandonment issues. So what I got to do is work on them. And the best way I can work on them, I got to be confronted with them. Hey, Angel, it's some seasons. It's winter. Spring, it's fall, and it's summer. Some people go, some people stay. Huh? So I gotta look at stuff like that. Even with my son, my mind would tell me, look, my son got a living nurse, and she doing so wonderful the care of my child. That she comes in my house at 10:30 every night. She don't even get a day off. I gave her the whole weekend off. I said, go ahead, with pay. This lady is at my house in my son's room and helping me administrate HIV meds in his stomach, and I feed him out of stomach, and this lady is there after work. I'm talking about, man, my son is doing so wonderful, man. I can't share no pain about them right now. I ain't even in no pain. Ain't nothing going on, no drama. I got some young ladies who asked me to sponsor them in the last year. And what happened is having me go back over my step work. Because I missed about 3 appointments with my sponsor. Well. Yeah. On my 3rd cycle, doing my 4th step. And my sponsor was like, what's really going on? And I had to be honest, and she already knew, but she wanted me to do the mission part. It was like, I got another addiction, and it's to work. And I like to work a lot. I keep 2 and 3 jobs. I just had to make a decision about 3 weeks ago to quit the 2 and 3 jobs and just keep one. Because now I'm saying that I'm not going to be responsible for the children I got, and I told you I'm getting ready to get my daughter, so I need to be home after 5.
That's right.
My mind say I need to work. But you saying out your mouth you want to get your daughter back, but you need to be home and be responsible for her. So God had prepared it that I let the gut jobs go, and I'm in the process of getting my daughter back. And while I'm all up in my head, he had already worked it out that I'm getting my daughter back. I don't got all them jobs. I can be responsible. Now I can call my sponsor and say, look, can you teach me how to do the pink and white bow rat thing? Because I don't know how to do that one. I might look cute, but, you know, I tell a dude, put some tracks in, you know. I don't really need tracks, but I just like. And I need my sponsor, like, or some other females in the room that got their grandchildren, can you teach me how to do the girl to girl thing? Because, see, I know how about the boys. Look, put your Timberland boots on, let's roll. Come on. Because, see, I'm a little cute. You know. But I got to be more attentive to my daughter. Look, I'm going to share some hope right now. My daughter is in the sixth grade. She just got accepted for an interview for Duke Ellington, and she ain't even in ninth grade yet. I was like, this little girl is drama. So when I look at her, I look at me. She can dance, act, lip sync. She all on a high school majorette, and she in the sixth grade. And she done got accepted for Duke Ellington. I said, girl, we gonna do this thing.
That's right.
My daughter emailed me yesterday. I was like, my God. She called me Missy. She was like, Missy, I love you. I was like, Missy, I love you too. And I look at how my children doing what they need to do. But the most important I got to do just for today, I need to stay clean and get better. Because now some woman's asking me to sponsor them. How about I got to be an example for my children? For another person coming behind me who go through what I done already been through, share with them my experience, strength, and hope that you ain't got to use. Look, it ain't got nothing to do with the HIV. Okay, and what? Now what we gonna do now? We ain't gonna use. Because see, what I need to worry about is my disease of addiction, not the HIV, because I'm undetectable. I don't have no problem. Every time I go to Dr. Rooney, talk about that. We talk about stress. My weight get real big, you don't know who I am. Next minute I'm slim down like that, I'm like, okay. So I gotta watch what kind of information I get from people. Matter of fact, what I take, because a lot of times I take your stuff. Whatever your dilemma, it becomes mine. So what I'm learning is don't try to take everybody's dilemma. Help them when you can, but don't even get all mixed in and trying to, you know, play God and help them to the extreme and guide them and walk them. Tell them one time, you could tell them two times, the third time they on their own. Man, I gave you the information. I ain't trying to be selfish, but it affects me. It affects me. Because when I see that you ain't doing what I say do, when I say do it, I get a problem. And I get sick. Not you. You walking on. I'm going to stress out. Because your dilemma becomes my dilemma. Mind your business, angel. That's not your dilemma. My dilemma for the day is I don't have none. I need to always keep the focus. Is the angel, stay clean. Continue doing your step work. And one thing about me, I will call my sponsor. I won't call her with no drama. I call her and talk to her exactly where I'm at today. And for the last year, 2 years, or 3 years went by, this lady have already been sponsoring me for years, ever since I had 2 years. And I go on 8. And what I noticed for the last 3, that I ain't called her with no drama. I call her straight up, look, this is what's going on. This is a solution. Let's talk about the solution. When I missed my 3 appointments, she was like, what's going on? She already knew I was at work. What's the solution, Angel? You need to do what you gotta do. Why you ain't come over my house? So this week when we leave here, I'm going over her house. I had to call her. Look, miss, you know I'm supposed to come over y'all because now I don't want to get better. How about that? I don't want to be walking around here and dying on the inside spiritually. And it affects other people because what I say out my mouth and how it harms people. And what I need to look at just for today is I'm very demanding and outspoken. And I tell you the truth. But by me being them type of characters in me, it has harmed other people. So I got people in my network tell me, Angel, hold up, don't say it like that. Watch how you say it. Watch your tone of voice. Watch how you deliver it out. So now I got to watch how I talk to people Even in my network, people love me. I got some people mad with me now because my deliverance was so outspoken and demanding. I harmed them. So now I had to go back to them and apologize. I am very sorry for my dilemma, for the way I came out to you, what I said. I ain't talking about what you did. I'm talking about what I did. So I got some people in the program, two people in the program. I ain't got to share about nothing else but my part. The good part was I was able to tell them I was wrong. I need to check my demeanor. I got to check how I deliver stuff out to people because a lot of times it would end up harming people because me being so straight up. You have harmed people. So I got some females and men tell me, no, Angel, that ain't right. You need to watch how you just said that. And then my demeanor about myself. I got a defense mechanism I'm already posted and ready to grit on you. You know, and all that bull crap. Because for real, I ain't feeling good about me. Huh? Well, sometimes they got to learn how to talk about the literature is listen. Just don't say nothing. They can be wrong and you can be right. Self-reliance. Be quiet. Don't say nothing. Okay. All right. So that's why I'm working on today is a lot of times I ain't got to respond to what you just said or how you acted. The difference is you can respond the way you do, but I got to look at me how I respond to what I do. You can act out. Look, my son 15, he acting out right now. Look, I got how many more minutes I got? Oh, wow. Look, my son is 15. I love him dearly. Where I'm at with my children is like my 15-year-old one of my sons, my 8-year-old one I shared about, my 15-year-old one, he at this place where I've been. So now I gotta love him in spite of, and look at me. My son is 15, so he at that space, he take a lot of showers, he on polo real hard, he don't go to no Walmart or, you know. He just do polo, right? And he take a lot of showers. He got the girlfriend thing, and his room stay junky. So I'm like, you know what? I give him, you know, some hope. I talk to him. He still will not do what I ask him to do. How about I gotta go home and take out the trash? And my boyfriend, he looking at him, both of them looking at each other, talking about who gonna take out the trash. Which one of y'all motherfuckers gonna take out the trash? Like, you know, I text it out there, you know. So I'm at a dilemma with my son going through this little stage of feeling himself. And my 20-year-old getting ready to come home for parole. January 13th, my baby be home. He been gone for 4 years. They raided my house to get my son. And I shared about this. My son is on his way home. I need to be there for my sons, man. And my daughter, because they looking at me. If my behavior is off the hook, they have asked me before when I was off the hook 3 years ago, out all night. Hold up, wait a minute, I'll be right back. The same pattern we was using, geeking, out the window, thinking something was crawling on me. I didn't even take a hit. I was talking about 3 years ago, gone. And my son thought I was smoking crack. He was like, Mom, did you go back out? No, boy, get out of my face. What's up with my behavior? So I got to watch what I do. Now my son on his way home, and the kicker is my son is doing so well. And I told my son, no matter what, man, I'm going to do what I got to do. And I love you, right? Me and my son so tight that it's just like all in me. When I go visit my son in Hagerstown, it'll be the best visit for me. Because I get to touch him, hold him, kiss him, and tell him I love him. It's going to be all right. He made some bad decisions. A lot of decisions did my children make. It came from me using. You need to look at the part I played in. You used, you tricked, you stole, you taught them how to do it when they did it. You can't get mad at talking about black did it around the corner. No, we learned that shit from you. So now when my son go out, act out, my son is locked up. from all this stuff over his head, and the result is right now today, my son got about 276 good credits. He coming home. He done passed his GED. He want to go to college. And I come in a meeting, I hear another guy share their story. Talk about when they was locked up, how they changed their life around. Mm-hmm. They give me some hope that it could happen for my son. And what I do is, I still do for my children. Even when I don't want to do, I do. Because if I can look cute, they can look nice, resemble too.
That's right.
But the most thing I do is I go through their room. I be like, look, you need this, you need that, you're going to get this, and we're going to do the once later. You got to go for some privileges now. That's how I do my son. I teach them how to be my man now, because I don't know what a man really is, because that's not who I had in my life. My father dead. The men figure I looked at, you had to have some money. We tricking. So now I got boys. So I got to teach them how to be a man. And what happened is, it ain't easy. They father dead. My 15-year-old, his son, his father's living. I had to call a dude and tell him, and I hope we don't go and repeat, but I'm letting it, was all for me. But I had to call a dude and tell him to email me a picture of him. Because I got a 15-year-old son by him. I don't know how he look now. It was 15 years ago. I was smoked out. I was cracked out my mind. I don't remember how my baby father, my son father looked. So you got to send me an email of how you look now. Because I don't, you know. But the good part is this man is being responsible for his 15-year-old child with no strings attached.
All right, now.
He's showing up. It could have been the other way. He came looking for us. I didn't look for him. He went on NA.com. He went on a, you know, online. You know how you find a person, find out where they live at. You know how they do that computer thing. He called me in my job, like, who is this? You know, I'm like, what? I asked him for, let me see your picture, because I forgot how you look. You know, the good part is, on the flip side, he could have been a type, didn't he look for me or his son? He had pictures of my son. He knew he had a son. He do what he do. But the good part is today's day he been in my son's life. And I ain't even mad. I be like, wow. I had always wanted to see him one day in Atlanta. So I get a chance to go next weekend with my son to the convention.
Wow.
Let my son spend the night with his father. And I stay at the convention. Because my mind will tell me I need to find out some more information. But by me sharing it with my network and my sponsor, they was able to tell me, Angel, you ain't got to find no more information on that board. Just mind your business. Just show up for the convention. Take your son. Let him spend his time with his father. And you do what you got to do. Because then we talk about my recovery, because I don't already share it. I know how to act out. I done already shared it with my network and everybody know. So I put it out there. Somebody gonna give me some good information. You ain't got to act out. The man is gonna look different. He looks very different. He let me know how messed up I am when I get high. All my baby daddies do. I look at every last one of them. When I'm dead, two I look at them, I'll be like, ooh. How I get there? Yes. They let me know that how messed up my mind is. I don't look at your name. Look, I don't even know your name. I just know your nickname. I might not even know that. I just know you got on a blue shirt. You got on a red shirt that day. That's all I know. Yeah. That's all I know. So now I got to look at me. That lets me know how I do when I'm using, and I'm capable of doing it clean, and have done it in recovery. How did you get out of it? I got tired of me. How about I was in a fetal position? My stomach was hurting, and I kept itching, and wasn't nothing crawling on me. I didn't take a hit, and I took a wig and wore it for about 2 months, and the wig was cocked to the side. Everybody know when I'm, like, not feeling good, I'm going to wear a wig. You know, I ain't even wear the wig in a while. I got a little piece of track right here. But this my ass. Like, well, how you get that? No, that's some progress for me. Because my sponsor was the one that took me to the wig store. What wig you going to pick out today? I was like, that one right there. I'm gone. Be gone by bye. I ain't been wearing no wig. I ain't hauled nobody. I ain't tricked with nobody. And I've been staying in my lane with one person for the last 7 years, and it ain't been an easy road. And I'm not sharing about him. I'm talking about my experience. Because a lot of times we get it confused. We wait 5 minutes after the meeting and go to him and tell him what I shared. He already know my story. How about I know my story? What happened is I want to get better. I ain't got nothing to do with his recovery. My sponsor had to help me with that. Mind your business. You get yours. You pray for him. You help him. And that's what I've been doing. A lot of times I get ridiculed for doing that. Why are you doing that? My sponsor, I believe in her. Help somebody. Don't judge them because of what you think they supposed to do when they supposed to do it. You need to look at you. And that's what I've been doing. That's how I've been able to stay in it so long. How you get there? Because I've been minding my business. I can't tell you what meeting to go to, who to use your sponsor, what step to do. You need to do it. That's how I'm going to get better. Because I know today, just for today, it talks about what I just explained, what I just said. Sharing my spirit, strength, and hope. Somebody else getting some hope. Somebody sharing their spirit, strength, and hope. Calling your sponsor. Doing what your sponsor just suggested for you to do. And go to meetings and listen. That's what it says for just for today. That's what I got out of it. So I want to thank y'all for letting me share.
Now I'd like to introduce Rob M., who will share his experience, strength, and hope.
Yes. Let me let everybody get where they're going. So it ain't a women's rap no more. My name's Rob, and I'm an addict. And I'd like to thank Angel for sharing her story with me, because I've been knowing her for a while, and I've never actually heard her story that in depth. And I'd like to thank this committee that asked me, Rob, to share this convention. And I'd like to thank everybody that's out there, because that in the beginning, that just for today, that's who my power was, you guys. I never ever saw anyone come to where I was killing myself at in the projects. Through the destructive force of using drugs. I never saw anyone leave there, get theyself together, and come back and tell me, come on, follow me. Never. People left briefly. They went probably to a program or down their grandma's house in the country or somewhere. They would come back and by all physical appearance look better, do what we call gain weight, get a haircut, maybe, you know, and they would come back, and we would be like prophesying, oh, that old Bam, he going to be using shortly, just hold on. And sure enough, they would. And that happened all the time. So I never knew people's lives changed in that arena until I got to Narcotics Anonymous. And I didn't go to treatment. That's why I like this this convention is talking about diversity is our strength. I ain't go to treatment, and I ain't want to go to treatment, and I still don't want to go to treatment, you dig? So I didn't go to treatment primarily because I didn't listen to nobody. I come from the streets, and in the streets that I come from, we kind of pride ourselves on being what we use the term and call thorough. And thorough simply means I do what I want to do. I don't care about the law. I don't care about the police. I don't care about my mother. I don't care about my father, my children. I don't care about nobody. Joe, trash can, rags, tree, rock, or none of them. I do what I want to do. And that's called being thorough. I do what I want to do. And I started doing what I wanted to do around the third grade. And I was very scared in the third grade. That prompted me on doing what I wanted to do. I was afraid because I moved to one of these devastating neighborhoods, projects, the ghetto of Southeast Washington, D.C., Berry Farms, if you must know the name. Right. And they jumped me as soon as I got there, and I ain't had nobody to fend for. I had no father, no big brother, or nothing. And they kicked me and stomped me and pummeled me. And I was scared to go outside ever since. I never was going outside no more until that lady that I called Mom said, go to the store a couple of days later. And I hated her ever since she said that. Right? When she said that, I immediately started to hate her because I wonder what kind of mother would do that. You know, I'm pointing at all these knots and bumps. She's talking about go to the store. And I ain't understand that at that time. Had to be about 8 or 9. And she pushed me outside and told me, go ahead. And I was standing out there crying, saying, I can't see it. Can't you tell my two sisters to go to the store? She was like, you going. And so I remember, like it was yesterday, I remember standing there crying. And a part of my mind saying, she going to change her mind. She going to let you in. And I remember, again, like yesterday, another part of my mind saying, no, she ain't. Right? And that feeling right there is almost like the birthplace of my life as I know it right now and today. Right? And it has changed and transformed, and it is marvelous. But I remember running to the store as fast as I could, got what I was supposed to get, and ran home fast as I could. And that's how I went everywhere for a good while, running fast as I could. And consequently, I became an excellent athlete, football player, because I grew up big and I was very fast. You know. And in my fast running, people saw me running fast all the time. I had a desire, just a desire, like the third tradition, to hang down on the strip. And at that time, in the late 60s, early 70s, they wouldn't let young guys like me just walk around the strip and hang out. They didn't do that. So they would whoop me and kick me and tell me go ahead back in the neighborhood. And I would go through all that kicking and throwing me down and all of that to hang around them. And one day, a guy asked me to run all the way to the neighborhood and get his jacket. He gonna call his mother on a payphone and for me to get it and bring it back. And I ran as fast as I could, got the jacket, and ran as fast as I could all the way back, and I was in. I was no longer scared anymore. It was like coming to Knockout as Anonymous and finding out that I don't have to use anymore. I got there, and he said, good Lord, man, that boy fat. Hey, Joe, man, that dude, man, look, he just left. And everybody started saying, run and get this, run and get that. And I started flying, and I was in. I can come down the strip now. I'm like 9 or 10. I can come down there. And I'm in. I ain't scared no more. Ain't nobody. It was a commercial out with June Reed. Nobody bothers me. And I was in. Nobody gonna bother me no more. I don't know about you. You may have never been a coward or never been afraid or never been scared. Because being a coward, I hide behind anything. My mother's skirt, a tree, anything. Anything. I hide behind anything. Anything, I do it right now in the day in recovery. It's just the things I hide behind have become a little more complex. I hide behind anything from a clitoris to a Cadillac, you dig? I hide behind anything because I'm scared. And now y'all walk up, you'll ask me something, and I'm all big and look strong. You'll ask me something, and it's just like a computer pop-up. I look for the first lie to pop up. Bam, I got one. No, that wasn't me. You dig? That's what I do, because I'm afraid. I might hurt your feelings. You may not like me no more. And you may not supply whatever you're supplying to me that gives me a false sense of empowerment. And if I don't get my empowerment from you, I'm going to be a sucker again. I ain't going to be thorough no more. So that's what I do. And just for today, I kept coming back to the strip. I kept coming back. And they kept saying, go run and get that. And I was in service. I was running. I started getting tired a little bit, right? I was like, well, I'm going to get a promotion. and send one of them other little kids to run. But they say, keep coming back. More will be revealed. And so more was revealed. At about 10 or 11 years old, the little Miller ponies in a bottle was revealed. And they were good when they was real cold. I don't like hot beer for some reason. And they started with the marijuana. And they would do things like play games with me because I was the little boy. They would play games like put us in a car, me with all them grown men in a car. And they would put like what looked like an army gas mask on me and put the joint in it and light it and strap it to my head. And when it would fill up with smoke and I couldn't get it off. So they would be laughing and giggling. So by the time it get off, I'm outside the car throwing up. And that was fun, and it was game. And to me, it became cool because that's my mob, like y'all my mob now, right? And so, you know, I entertained them and became like them. And something happened, though, with the little Miller pony and the marijuana. The little scared little boy found out that if I commit insane acts, that really make you thorough. And people respect you. So I started committing those insane acts, like jumping over the counter first, hitting you in your mouth first, taking your wallet, doing stuff that we would do as a gang, but I was afraid, and I ain't do it for real. I'd just be in the back of the gang cheering or might throw one fist so you can know I'm with you, but I don't really want to do that because I remember getting jumped before. So I don't want nobody to jump me, so I ain't going to jump nobody. And I remember also thinking, but what if we get to our hut and they say, you ain't do nothing, and they jump on me. So I wouldn't be an outcast and get beat up again. I would do what they do. We call it peer pressure, I think, today. But, yeah, so that's my story, man, being a coward, being scared, and having an insatiable appetite for some power. I always wanted power. Because I was scared. So I wanted anything that make me strong, I needed. And what I did, I would race home from school and go look at Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, and all of them. Because I wanted the power they had. Because I said, I'm going to whoop somebody, them dudes, if I can get that power. Right? And how I got the power, the symbol, the what I thought was power, was hanging on the avenue. And then I found out I also was a pervert as a little boy. Yeah, that happened too. And, I found some Playboy books and took them to school in the third grade and immediately was famous, you know, in the third grade. Every day at lunchtime, where Rob at? Because we going around the back of the school and read these books. And I could read very well because being a coward, I didn't want to go outside for recess because something might happen, you know, and I don't want to be out there. And so I'm hanging with the teacher, good dude. Matter of fact, he was a Caucasian, and up until that time, I never had a dealing with a Caucasian, and he was the best person in my life ever for a long time because he showed me how to read, how to break words down, consonants, vowels, math, arithmetic, and man, I was in. But when I got around back to read the words to the Playboy book to my buddies, I really was in. Every day, that's my buddy, that's him. You got another book? You got something else here? Every day. So getting these, and I'm going back there because I'm showing you how I wanted that power so bad. And then when drugs came and people started, my name went from being Junior because I'm named after my father to JR, to Junior Moore because it was a lot of juniors, to JR because that sounded more slicker on the street, to Crazy J by the time I was 12. 12 years old, my name was Crazy J. And I ain't got to tell y'all why, right? And I was in jail at 12. And I was very scared again because they took me out of my environment where I built all this crazy J up. And they say, they rape little kids down there where you at. And I said, they do what? So all that power and image and Superman I done built up, I'm going right back to jail as a 12-year-old. And I'm Clark Kent all over again. You dig? And don't nobody down there know me. And I was petrified. You talking about raping a little kid? I was petrified. Right? Thank God ain't nobody raped me. But I had to fit in again. I saw guys who was in my neighborhood who had built a little name for themselves, and I immediately fit right in with I'm going to do what they doing. But also, thank God for Department of Corrections and stuff of that nature because somebody saw something in me in the school test. This is a smart little kid. academically. And so they kind of guided me toward making me go to school, which alleviated me from being around the so-called thorough dudes all the time. And consequently, to speed the story up, I've been in jail all my life. I'm 46 years old, and I've spent more time in prison than I have on the street. One thing about me always going to prison, I do what they say do. I follow the rules in prison. I don't know why. I always did. And in prison, I always feel better than I do on the street. I never understood why do I maximize my potential physically, mentally, and spiritually when I'm in prison. But when they say, get out, go home, you're on your own, I tear my whole self up. You know, I'm back to a bum again. And I never understood that. And now we're talking about over and over and over again. So this is a perfect gift for me, Narcotics Anonymous. It was the perfect gift. Like to a woman, it might be a diamond or a Lexus, right? It was the perfect gift for me because constantly going in jail and being, when I go to jail, I'm like Malcolm X. I read all the books. I lift all the weights. I'm strong. I'm like a politician and I can get stuff done and, you know, in jail, you know, but I can't get nothing done on the street by myself. And I ain't understand that. And I started praying to God, God, I'd rather stay in jail with you than to keep coming out on society by myself, right? And what happened was I kept going to jail, and I kept coming out, and I kept going back in. I would go get 4 years, be clean. And this is the trip part right here. When I go to jail, I look like that guy on Tales of the Crypt. When I go to jail, that's how I look, right? Teeth gone, skin gone, rib cage showing, everything. And, out the frame, socks and drawers stuck to your body, all that. And then after you see me in jail for a while, this was the trip because people would come visit me, and they'd come see, you know, family members in there, and they come, and they look at you. They're like, boy, you sure look good. And I'd be like, man, yeah. And then they would say stuff like, when they leave, keep doing what you're doing. I'd be like, they must not know I'm in jail. What are they talking about? You know what I'm doing. But when they see me on the street by myself, man, won't you go do something about yourself? Won't you get help? You know, and that was my story. So I told you originally I didn't go to treatment, but when I look back, that was my treatment. And when I got to Narcotics Anonymous and I read the literature, it was like the perfect gift. I never heard nobody say, we use to live and live to use. All the books I read, Playboy and all of them, from Playboy to the encyclopedias, I never heard we use to live and live to use. And that was my whole life it boiled down to, right? I say, damn, somebody shopping this program. Let me read some more. Then it say stuff like, when at the end of the road, we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with drugs or without it. We all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? I say, damn, I ain't never heard that before. Never. Never read it. Nobody never told it to me. And this one really got me. We put drugs ahead of the welfare of our family, friends. I say, oh, Lord, I had to sit here and investigate. I had to investigate something going on. And during my investigation, I looked up, and I ain't used for about 7 days. And that was a miracle because I've been using it since I can remember. I always, when I drank that first Miller Pony, I never stopped using except in jail. So when I got here and they said social acceptability does not equal recovery. That's why I share every day, most of y'all don't know me, I share every day, all day. Every day, all day. Just like I did on the strip. I was sharing every day, all day in a negative, destructive manner. Now I share every day, all day in a positive manner. And the reason being because of the power. The power that had me trapped over there, I did what it said it did. I go to jails and institutions. I don't just stand on a corner and buy a dime and dump it. I couldn't do that. I had to be in service on the strip. That was my thing. And because I was in service, I got what they got in service. Because when I'm under the lower power, right, I give it my all. I'm going to jail. I don't care about getting shot at. I don't care about shooting nobody. I don't care about robbing. I don't care about stealing. I don't care about none of that under the lower power. So I ask myself a real simple question. How could I be under a higher power and got a whole lot of stuff to do besides what that higher power telling me to do? It ain't work for me. So I surrendered. Just like I surrendered to the lower power when them dudes was kicking me with them brogains and making me not saying, get away from here. I surrendered and did whatever they told me to do. Run over there, run over there, run down there, run down the train track, run, swim over there. I was gone, right? So now they tell me do something over here. What time I got to do it? I got something to do. I don't have that story. Right, I'm one of them people that they'll say you do more for the people in Narcotics Anonymous than you do for your own family. That's true with me, and it's gonna always be that way. It ain't gonna change it ain't gonna change if I got something to do with it, because the people in Narcotics Anonymous saved my life. My mother could not save me. My grandmother couldn't save me. They did. I don't even have any grandparents. They died talking to me. Get yourself together. Why are you treating your mother like that? Look at you. You're a smart guy. And they dead and gone. I kept doing what I was doing. It wasn't until I came to this program. This program is like my mother. And that's how I treat it. I treat it like that. I breastfeed from the literature. You dig? That's what nurtures me. I understand the importance of nurturing. Why? Because I'm what you call institutionalized. And if I don't incorporate the principles that I got from that being institutionalized, I'll become what you call destitute. That's almost like being deinstitutionalized and butt naked without nothing. So I'm not going that way. So I'm going to stick with what they instilled in me, right? Yeah, that's where I'm going, because I love the way I live. I'm scared most days. Very scared most days, because I don't know. And I always want to know. So I'm living in the I don't know. In our literature, around third step, they call it faith. Right? And I got a lot of it because I've been walking the I don't know for so long. But what helps me is you people. Because I see other people who know everything, and I see what they get. And I'm like, I don't want that shit. So they be saying, you know. No, I don't know. I don't know. I asked him. You see what I'm saying? He know. She know. I asked her. And she be like, yeah, I know. And I be like, God damn. Say it. You dig? From me. You dig? And that's what I don't want to know no more. You dig? And in the not knowing, I've got better. Just like in prison. I like the just for the day text, because it always compare and contrast what we do in using in our active addiction and what we should be doing in our active recovery. All the time they comparing and contrasting. And so that's what I do. That's what I do. I look at when I was in prison, what made me so, feel so alive. You know, I would be in prison. I would be walking around the yard with a buddy, and we talking about what we're going to do when we get home, and we're going to live right, and we're going to raise the kid. All the lies we've been saying all the other times we was in there. And so we walking around, and then I notice over the fence, I see a pond, and it might be some ducks on the pond and birds flying, and the trees got beautiful autumn colors. And I'm saying, man, look at that. That's peaceful. Me and him talking about the peaceful landscape. Me and Bobo, or me and Bruiser, right? Two killers. We talking about the landscape, right? And then when I get out, I don't see no landscape. I don't see no ducks. I don't see no beautiful autumn tree. All I see is the ground, cement, blood, death, the burning of steel, the smell of steel, bloodshed. Man, it's sad until I get back there. And if you put it in a woman term, if you made it a human being, if I said, what if going to jail was one woman and going back into society was another woman? And I compared the woman, like the Just for the Day does. I say, this woman, jail, supplies all my needs. I can get free medical, free dental, free food, free clothes, free exercise equipment, all everything, big screen TV, cable. I don't have to do nothing. That's one woman, number one. And this woman, number two, always just yakking, talking. What you gonna do now? You better go get a job. What about this? What about now? Gentlemen in the audience, which woman would you choose to spend the rest of your life with? Okay. Well, we're going to go on with that. Just for today, right, I have chose time and time and time and time again to choose to be with that easier woman that does not forfeit or allow me, that doesn't allow me the right to develop into the man that my Creator has called me to be. Because it's easier. To arrest my development is easier than to work. And I don't like work. Well, I didn't. So that's the choice I made. But just for today, how much I got? Okay. And so enough about me. And when I'm talking, man, I pray. And before I come up, I pray not to preach, teach, and moralize, because I'm one of them studious dudes, right? I study, right? So, and my wife get on me for highlighting and underlining every book in the house, highlight her. God damn, you know, and that's what they buy me. They buy me stuff like that for Father's Day, is highlighters. You know what I'm saying? Buy them some highlighters. Well, I got all these damn highlighters. Get them some more, right? You know, but, you know, and that's what I do. And because I do that, I understand that carrying the message of Not College Anonymous, for me, I love the message that I carry, that I live and carry. I love that one because that one easier. I'm used to being me. And you know, like when you're in jail, you kind of got to be you. You kind of got to be you, because if you be faking and you get found out, you got to check in. You have to check in or they're going to run you in. So I kind of used to being me. I didn't accept me until I got to Not College Anonymous and started doing step work. But I kind of used to being me. And in being me, I just love I love this program. I love what it gives me with the practicing the principles. It says stuff like you can call your higher power the group, the program, or God. And I did all that. I did all that. It was like going to elementary school. First, I had to learn the alphabets, A, B, C, A, D, whatever. You know, I had to learn that. And then you put like a couple of them together and you get a word. So then I remember running home saying, I know how to spell cat. And they'd be like, spell it. I say C-A-T. They'd be, yeah, okay. And but I was so happy. I can put something together and spell a word. And then after I got cat, then I learned to put some words together and make a sentence. See rags run. You know, and I thought I was brilliant when I wrote that, right? And they say, what? I can read a sentence. And I say, see rags run. They say, yeah, okay, you doing it. And that's kind of how the program has been for me. After I learned to put a word together, then I learned to put a sentence together. After I put the sentence together, then I can put a paragraph together. Then after the paragraph, then I can put some other paragraphs with it and, you know, get the message across in that manner. And this is how the program has been for me. First, it was a group. Told you, I've never seen anybody stop using. So I say, I got to hang around here for a while. And when I saw that empowered me. You can't stop using. And I hold that. And it was really the attraction of the cars and the jewelries and the nice looking women. That was the main attraction. But then I noticed I don't have to use no more, and that got me. And then the program set in, right? The program for me was applying the principle, like stop lying. Boy, that was the hardest thing in the world for me. I still lie sometimes, not all day long like I used to, but, you know, but that was the hardest thing in the world. How you tell the truth when you know it's going to hurt somebody's feelings and they ain't going to accept it, or, you know, you got to get some money back? I was like, but I told myself, God, you, I think I see you. When I had them 7 days clean, I was like, God, I think I see you. I'm going to try it. So I say, yeah, you right. Yeah, that was me messing with her. And where you at? And then I just, that relationship over. And when I started telling the truth, when I look back what happened, the truth kind of set me free from all the lies I built up myself in. You know, so the people who was for real and should have been there anyway, they stayed. You did? But for me, I was so scared and I'm petrified. I don't want to hurt your feelings. You did? I don't want nobody to hurt mine. You did? But I found out I'm the one that been hurting me the most my whole life. Right? And when I found that out, stuff like love your enemies. I thought that was the craziest thing. I say, look, that man, I don't know how they call that man who he is with that sentence right there. He got to be retired. Love your enemies. They can't break that down in no algebraic, college math, or calculus. They can't break that down. No way, shape, form to me. And Narcotics Anonymous broke it down for me. Narcotics Anonymous helped me understand that I am the worst enemy that I have ever had in my whole life. And if I don't love this enemy first, well, I ain't got nothing coming. I don't have nothing coming. This enemy right here, you couldn't have done that much of what I done to myself and still be sitting in your chair. Yeah, I punish me. And because I'm a coward, when the lights go out, you know, if you ever seen the movie and they dying and it start getting darker, I'm so much a coward. When I see it getting dark, like the disease doers, our family leaving, our friends leaving, everybody leaving, I holler out, I want help. I want help me. Treatment. Help. Help. I quit. I surrender. I surrender. I only do that long enough until they stop the thing, right? And I say, okay, I'm in. I just was playing. I really don't want no help. I just want you to stop. I was about to go out. And now I'm going to walk around halfway alive, acting as if I'm fully living. I come in a program, my story, I come in a program that's full of life, full of giving you joy and peace and everything. And I walk around and act like y'all, but have none of the above. None. And I'm sitting in here with y'all and going with y'all, going to conventions and throwing all these functions for Narcotics Anonymous and Miserable. I'm wearing what y'all are wearing. I'm saying what y'all are saying. And I'm even trying to do what y'all do. But I'm miserable. Right? Been there. So, my story is I quit. All right. You dig? I'm a coward, and I rely on God. Well, I call him God today. The program, the group, the program, it has evolved into what I call God. And he awesome. He's awesome. He's the best thing that ever happened in my life. I'm here to tell you I live better than I ever lived. And the trip part is I don't even want to live for me. I want to live for you. You dig? And I don't know how that happened because I didn't come here acting, thinking none of that. You dig? I want to live better for you. I done went back to school not because I want a degree. I don't like school. I told you I do what I want to do. I want to be a better servant than I am. So I want to go get more information. You dig? And I want to go not to the people who know me and we friendly. I want to go out to them people who still saying, man, you suck. If you all that, give me $10 then. You know? You know? I want to go to them people. You dig? You bam, you ain't who you think you is. I want to go to them people. Because if I got this real power, this higher power, which they told me that we are going from self-centeredness to God-centeredness, and if God is centered in me, that means if I go somewhere where it's real dark at, some light going to come. You dig? That's what I think. Now, and if I walk in darkness and it's just as dark as it was before I got there, I might want to reevaluate my power structure. You dig? And that's what I did. I'm going to leave y'all with this here. For me, man, this power is what attracted me to the program because I'm a coward and I'm scared and I don't like, you know, I'm just a coward. But so I wanted the power. And this power that I found in this program, I don't know why I found it in this program, but I had a relationship with God before I got here in my early 20s. And I left him because my family and friends didn't accept me. They thought, he go to church all the time. He all holy now. And I felt bad. And I felt bad, and I kind of compromised with God. Let me go with them, and I'll be back. Or I still love you, but all my family, I need to be around them. And he said, go ahead. That's what it felt like, he said. And so I went back with them and started back drinking and hanging out and doing what we do. And then crack cocaine came out. And in less than 6 months, I was begging, God, please let me back in. I swear, if you let me back in this time, I would never, I don't care about no mother, no father, no children. No, I would never leave again. And I begged for like 15 years. Toward the end, I was trying to kill myself. I thought of, and I was on the highway to jump in front of a truck and kill myself because I thought God wasn't coming back, right? Or I wasn't going to be allowed to get back. And I'm here to report a guy pulled over. He saw me and knew me and pulled over on the highway, and I started drying my tears because I was trying to jump. You know, I was like they play double dutch like girls play rope, right? I was like, I'm going this time. I'm going. But I couldn't go. And I began to cry because I always did everything I wanted to do in my whole life. In that particular moment, I couldn't jump in front of the truck. And I started saying, oh, I thought you was thorough. you know, and I started crying because I couldn't do it. And I found out, looking back, I can hurt everybody else, but I really don't want to hurt me. You did. So that's what happened. Thank God he didn't allow me to kill myself. But for real, when I got to Narcotics Anonymous, it was like I died. It's like I died. The old me is gone. The old me is gone. Been gone. Dead bird. Got a stake in his chest like a vampire. And I found out through you all that I can remove the stake off the vampire, and JR will pop up and run rampant all over again. Just for the day. Thanks for letting me share.